Okay, hello everyone. So my name is Glenn Jones. This presentation is not, there is no legal aspect to it really. It's more about a practitioner's view of asset recovery and what it means to us on the ground. First of all, I guess it's picking up on a point that was left from one of the earlier sessions about what frames a discussion around proxy to crime legislation. And within the policing context, it's very much framed around cash assets and what we get back. We don't apply an investigation simply because somebody has got lots of money, but within a senior level, I'm glad Mr. Wiggett, my assistant chief constable, has walked out. but within the context of financial investigation, a lot of it at senior management level comes down to cash, comes down to what we get back through the ARIS fund. On the ground, what we have a real difficulty in doing is actually sharing with our investigative colleagues the benefits of financial investigation and the power of the confiscation regime and the cash regime as well. But when we get to things like this, who says that £45 billion represents a criminal economy? Who measures it? Where do we get that figure from? And I have real difficulties then when we come down to £2 billion each year. Was it 133 million recovered? Well, there's £2 billion a year out there. I accept I'm at the bottom of the tier of criminality in many regards. But at the end of the day, we represent one of the biggest forces in the country. And so we should be awash with criminal assets. And quite frankly, we often struggle to find them. So this basically is what we do in Greater Manchester. You will look at the correlation between the decline in confiscation and the rise in forfeiture. And our friends in the CPS often say that's because the green represents 50% of ARIS. The blue 18.75. Well, that's not the case, actually. No. But catching up from earlier points, the forfeiture is the draconian piece of legislation for me. £1,000 or more can be taken, applied at magistrate's court to a civil standard, no legal aid. So they are the usual suspects, and they are people who have got the least means to defend themselves. What GMP stands, I think, is an open one. We employ our own solicitors. The CPS don't engage with forfeiture at magistrate's court. And we apply a very robust stance on forfeiture. It's very quick, it's very effective. And we don't lose very many cases, I have to say. Confiscation is a different animal altogether. But We see in both cases, even though there's been a decline in the numbers of confiscation orders, the value has increased. And that is in no part the help we get from our CPS colleagues. And the panel that's not been mentioned so far is the court service, because they're responsible for the enforcement of orders. And I'll come on to their role in. But at the end of the day, this is our performance in terms of asset recovery. When you look at it in terms of billions of pounds of assets out there, what are we looking at? 42 million over the past 7 years. So we're missing a great deal. If the argument is true that there are these billions of assets out there. So part of my MA was really to look at how criminals spend the money, to try and identify not only how criminals spend it, but what is the threat of criminal money as well. But that's another matter. So I looked at 1,450 confiscation orders. And out of these, I chose two of the higher asset groups to sort of in detail look at how criminals were actually disposing of their cash. And what came out of it is, quite frankly, no surprise. Yeah. But it comes down to, this is the reality of criminal spending, yeah? I'm talking about GMP's level, so we're talking about level 1, level 2 criminality, yeah? so within Manchester, and cross-border crime too, but not national, not international. This is it, yeah? It's mundane, it's every day. But this is a majority of orders, under 5,000. If you look at there's half of those under £1,000. You get up into the higher asset field, and you tend to get people who commit fraud. So the more complex the fraud, the higher asset tends to exist. But even where we have a high asset, it tends to be in terms of houses. The complexity of transfers and layering of money laundering doesn't exist. Certainly not how I interpret it. You know, where people buy houses or they invest locally, they buy houses and then rent them. The self-laundering phenomenon is the thing. People don't use professionals to launder in this experience. Now, clearly, in previous experience, they do. But I'm talking here, in the majority of cases, it's wives and girlfriends, it's brothers, it's uncles, yeah? So when we convince when we seize multi-kilos of drugs, which we're exceptionally good at, that again gets bashed and made into 5 kilos for every kilo. So we're making hundreds and hundreds of thousands of pounds. Nobody stops and thinks, well, where's the cash? You know, we're very good at that. We're very good at seizing the commodity that we still see as drugs. But we're not very good at thinking about where's the cash gone. So we don't follow the money. So we don't use the powers of money laundering, the application of pocket to its fullest extent. We talk about attrition in confiscation too, which has been dealt with elsewhere. But, you know, we've got police officers who are car salesmen, CPS, who are now estate agents. How do you enforce a sale of assets that are here, you know, the low-value assets that you're trying to sell? Your court determines the value of an asset based on what? You know, it's a glasses guide that we use to value a car. And what is the value of a car when we sell it? So we end up with numerous visits to a Crown Court to determine what the value of these assets is. And so we end up with what was in order, what was an available amount that becomes a lot less than the available amount. So the reality of it, I'm afraid, is this. And the other factor is where we do find assets abroad, they tend to be from the home country. If money's transferred abroad, it tends to be, again, very much where they're comfortable with being. But how do you enforce the sale or the recovery of assets abroad? It's a real issue. Recovering the evidence in the first place is problematic. It's lengthy. But the enforcement of these orders becomes really difficult. And so we end up with like this. And John Turner, by the way, is one of our advisors. And I think his comment is key. A good confiscation follows a good conviction. So we are often challenged. We end up with a very high benefit figure and a lower available amount, which is a lot less than we would hope for. So we end up with the revisits scenario that we talked about here. And as an example, we looked at 1,200 of our outstanding orders where they owe over £20,000, and it comes to 151 million of criminal benefit. And so we're trying to go back and revisit these, but of course Pocket doesn't really accommodate the investigative side of it. So there's a disconnect. Going back to the earlier discussion about the seizure of assets, how do we lawfully seize assets when we're at an early stage of an investigation and we're in a criminal's house, and we see the new kitchen, the laminate flooring and the big TV? You know, we do see a development at the moment of a discussion about taking with us valuers to a property so they can value the whole house at that stage. Because if most money is spent in cash, which it appears to be, on general living expenses, how do we capture that in when we come to a confiscation? I put it out there, I don't know the answer to it, but it's a reality of it. We've already heard about the new developments in the POP team. Is there anyone? I didn't hear of anyone from the court service. Court service are a real partner in this enforcement of orders. And they've been really challenged. Things have moved to a region to manage the enforcement of orders. Where there's a restraint, the CPS will enforce it. That tends to be a house. But we are really, they are really challenged with having defendants sell their assets. And how do you enforce a sale of an asset? Of course, you're sent to prison for the default sentence. But at the end of the day, we're still chasing the asset. So the impact of austerity going forward will really challenge us, I think, in how we manage the realisation of orders. Just an example, I think this might be old hat now because we've got a new POC team, we're going to have a new regime, we're going to be really robust around orders. But here's an example, a real example of how we apply money laundering legislation and how we suffer from attrition. This guy, David Staden, was convicted of importing drugs in the early 2000s. He died in a, unfortunately, in a car accident. 6 years later, his girlfriend then, we found some cash in a cash box, and it led us to Daniela Green, who had no convictions, no income either, but she had, well, not really sure, it's a big bungalow. But she had to live on board. And she had no income. So we prosecuted her with her, and we engaged with the CPS, and the irresistible inference around money laundering was made out, wasn't it? She didn't have any income, but she had the house. It was valued originally at 1.2 million, if you can believe it. But the order was made for £535,000, the confiscation order. And so how do you enforce the sale of this property that, you know, it's the upper end of the market, in Rochdale, that's part of Manchester, not too far from here. CPS, we engaged with enforcement. Daniela did all she could to frustrate the sale, not least in just removing items from around the house so the appearance looked, it reduced the appearance, reduced the price. In the end, it went to auction, it sold for 180,000. So when we talk about attrition, you know, this is a real example, and this is what I guess I'm trying to say, is it's a practical application of confiscation. How do you practically apply it? When the legislators were thinking about it's a good idea, a great idea to take away the profits from crime, well, if the profits are in chattels, you know, how do we actually do that? How effectively do we do it? I think it is a real challenge around it. We've already, the issue of the Act being draconian, the pendulum has it swung in a different way. I think we've gone into that suitably. And that's it.